I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. Today we're going to listen to most of a speech by Ben Gertzel. He's the CEO of a firm called Novamente, which is an artificial intelligence design firm. This speech is Artificial General Intelligence and the Singularity. Ben is a part of the transhumanist subculture, and so his talk makes a lot of transhumanist assumptions about the rapidity with which we'll be seeing things like nanotechnology and general artificial intelligence, and also the desirability of some of these innovations. Pretty challenging material, and I hope that you find it provocative. Ben's presentation style is pretty relaxed, so sit back and listen to Dr. Ben Gertzel on Artificial General Intelligence and the Singularity.
What I'm going to talk about today is my work on artificial intelligence technology in the context of the singularity and the various related other technological changes that we see ahead of us. And it's a pleasure to be able to talk about my AI work in this context. I give a lot of presentations to more traditional academic audiences where you have to focus on the short term and kind of give a backseat to the long-term ambitions that are really what AI should be about. So I'm gonna start out by talking a bit about the singularity and the general path that I see the development of science, technology, and society taking during the next few years and decades. Then I'm gonna talk more specifically about my own artificial intelligence work and how it fits into this general context. Probably you're familiar with the concept of the singularity, which has been popularized by a number of thinkers, including Werner Vinge and Ray Kurzweil. The notion of the singularity, put simply, is that at some point the rate of change of technology is going to get so fast that the human mind cannot keep up with it. The pace of introduction of new innovations will get faster and faster, accelerating year by year, until the human mind can't even stop to think between one revolutionary innovation and the next one. And Kurzweil has done a particularly careful job of putting together graphs, charts, and scientific data analysis showing why this is reasonably likely to happen. I think this is all pretty exciting. I'm not sure the quantitative aspect is as fundamental as Kurzweil and others have portrayed it. What I think is most critical is the qualitative aspect of the technological and scientific changes that we see happening. The real point to me is there's a handful of fundamental innovations on the horizon, and they all relate to each other closely. If any one of them happens, it's going to help the others to happen. And when these things happen, it's going to revolutionize everything in terms of human life, human thought, human society, and it's going to enable us to go far beyond what we now think of as human. So what are these radical innovations? One of them is the thing that I'm going to talk to you about most today, which is artificial intelligence, the creation of software programs and machines that can think and understand things in a very general and powerful way. Another of these radical innovations on the horizon is nanotechnology. Just creating things that are very small, of course, it's not that exciting in itself, but nanotechnology brings with it an amazing number of other possibilities, which Eric Drexler, Ralph Merkel, and others have explored very well. And with nanotech, you can make computers that go amazingly more quickly than any computer you can make using macro-scale materials. And that has, of course, obvious implications for AI. With nanotechnology, we could make little machines that go inside our bodies and fix medical problems, copy the information in our brains to put it in computers or other media. So the possibilities of nanotech are really dramatic, and it's pretty amazing to me how quickly nanotech has gone from being some starry-eyed ideas in the minds and writings of Drexler and a few other visionaries to being what it is now, which is a major industry, and you have venture capitalists funding nanotech companies one after the other, and huge amounts of government dollars going into nanotech research. Biotechnology, another exciting area, which I've been involved with through my work with the startup company BioMind. And, you know, the genome was sequenced much faster than anyone thought it would be, and was an interesting example in the exponential acceleration of technology. They thought sequencing the human genome would take maybe a decade and a half. When that time period was halfway done, they were 1% done with it, and everyone said, "Well, look, it'll never happen. Look how slowly you're going." But with the exponential growth rate, you know, that 1% involved them inventing all the technologies needed to sequence the rest of the genome way, way faster, and the thing ended up happening ahead of schedule. Now that the genome is sequenced, that has set the framework for us to really understand what makes the human machine work. It's hard to project exactly what's going to come out of all this at what point in time, but it's pretty obvious the possibility is there for new forms of matter, new forms of life, new forms of intelligence, new forms of computing, new forms of society, human interaction and relationship beyond anything that any of us could really imagine in detail. But it's really clear now there are no fundamental objections to making intelligence emerge from software. There are no fundamental objections to making all kinds of complex machinery out of atoms and molecules and reconfiguring matter basically at will. There are no fundamental objections to understanding the human machine, other biological machines, and modifying them in a quite flexible way. For all these things, it's just a matter of time before science and technology gets to the point where we can realize what a few decades ago would have seemed like completely insane fantasies. And which of these is the most critical? I think it's pretty obvious that the most critical of these technologies is going to be the one that helps the most in accelerating the other technologies. And along these lines, my claim is that the greatest acceleration potential there is, the greatest acceleration potential is in things that enhance intelligence itself. Because the bottleneck in developing all these technologies is just the power of thought. Even the greatest scientists in the world are stupid compared to the difficulty of these problems. And everyone who does science for a living comes to feel very stupid for taking so long to solve problems that, in hindsight, seem like they should have been very obvious to solve. If you can make the brain work better, you can increase the rate of exponential acceleration in science and technology by just an incredible amount. So the most value in terms of moving toward singularity and radical change is in things that can accelerate the scientific and technological discovery process. Now, how can you do that? You can improve human intelligence through brain modification of various sorts, human augmentation, and to a limited extent, that's done now by things like computer programs and Google and so forth. Those all enhance human intelligence. Or you can create artificial intelligence and focus it on helping to solve these other problems. And these are the two things that I think are most important in terms of bringing about the singularity. Because if you achieve either of those, everything else can go way, way faster. Of those two things, it seems to me that creating artificial intelligence is one that has the most potential of happening faster and of yielding more dramatic results. Yielding more dramatic results because in improving the human brain, you're up against the limitations of the human brain. We've evolved to be relatively stupid creatures, and to modify the human brain to be much smarter, I'm sure it's possible, but you're fighting against the very architecture of the human brain, and very difficult questions arise. How much can you change and improve the human brain without making it something that's beyond human and non-human? There's also pragmatic issues with human intelligence modification. A few bold adventurers may be willing to do some do-it-yourself brain surgery at home and augment their intelligence in an experimental way, but not many people are. And there are legal objections. Whether you think they're right or wrong, there are significant legal obstacles to doing experimentation with human intelligence enhancement. We can experiment with making very smart rats, mice, monkeys, and so forth, but ultimately that's only a limited step toward enhancing human intelligence, because what we really want to enhance is precisely the things that are different between us and these other animals. Artificial intelligence, on the other hand, You know, you're starting from a clean slate. You can bring knowledge about the human mind, the knowledge about logic, reasoning, mathematics, complex systems, other areas, into the process. But ultimately, you're not hampered by an evolutionary architecture that evolved for mating, picking bananas off the trees, and beating the hell out of your enemy. You can start from scratch and try to make something that's very intelligent, understands itself and the world in a more rational and comprehensive way. And you don't have these legal and ethical and pragmatic concerns. Right now, at least, no government on the world is trying to ban or place legal limitations on artificial intelligence research. I don't want to rule out the possibility that this could happen eventually. It could, but I think whatever oppressive legal objections are made to AI work, they're always going to lag behind the obstacles placed in the way of biotech and human brain modification. We're just a lot more paranoid about protecting humans from advancement than about protecting programs from advancement. So for these reasons, I think the number one step we can take to bring the singularity about is to work on artificial intelligence with a view toward making computer systems that are smart enough to accelerate all the other advances that we're talking about. And of course, once these other things are accelerated, that can enhance AI in itself. Once AI helps us make nanotech and quantum computing, then no doubt these technologies will help us make more and more powerful AIs. And even biotech, the problems with human brain enhancement are going to be solved a lot more easily with the help of really powerful AI scientists than they will be solved by humans on our own. So this is the reason that I'm working on AI now instead of working on other areas that are also very interesting and important. It provides the greatest leverage to bring about a positive singularity. Before going into any of the details about my own thoughts on artificial intelligence, I want to briefly mention the negative possibilities that come along with AI. And when you talk about the ethics of artificial intelligence or any new technology, I feel like the discussion usually becomes much too negative, much too quickly. People are always worried about whether it's unethical to create something new, but not enough attention is given to how unethical it may be not to create something new, if that thing can save a lot of lives and can do a lot of good. It's not as though the two alternatives are keep human life exactly as it is now, or, on the other hand, have human life exactly as it is now, plus have AI. Those are not the alternatives. The world is changing rapidly. The advance of terrorist weaponry increases every year, and there's no doubt in my mind that in a couple decades, anyone with a reasonable amount of lab equipment will be able to make biopathogens with amazing destructive power. Not to mention the possibility of nanotech leading to weapons of various sorts that we can't even describe in detail now. They talk about nanotech turning everyone into gray goo by just reconfiguring matter into a homogeneous condition. That's possible. A lot of other nasty things are possible as well. Every positive thing you can point out with the convergence of these technologies is matched by another negative thing. And if you just resist artificial intelligence, that doesn't solve all the problems. In my view, it just makes the situation worse. Because without AIs, we're just stuck with a whole bunch of advanced technologies being completely owned and created by human beings with our legacy brains and our chimp-like motivational systems. If we have AIs as our partners in the advanced or the singularity, we have the potential of having a more rational mind, helping us make these very difficult decisions and helping us make these technologies. So it seems to me that if AI is done right, so that the AI minds manifest their potential of being more reasonable, more rational, and less insanely emotional than humans are, then having the AI as a partner will help us chart a much safer course towards singularity. These issues of ethics lead into an important issue in the development of AI, which has been called the difference between a hard takeoff and a soft takeoff. So what's a hard takeoff? A hard takeoff is a scenario where basically one day you're sitting at your computer typing, programming an AI, and it's, it's playing chess and conversing with you in a kind of stupid way, like a little baby. Then 15 minutes later, the AI has reprogrammed the operating system of the computer that it's on and is demanding that you add 80 billion more machines to its infrastructure or it'll transform you into Computronium. That's an extreme case of a hard takeoff. The idea is that there's exponential acceleration, and once the AI has gotten a little bit smarter, it can get smarter and smarter, faster and faster over time. Once it's learned to reprogram its own software code, then it can reprogram itself in a way to make it a little smarter. Then it gets a little smarter. Once it's gotten a little smarter, it can reprogram itself again, so forth, over and over again. So the AI gets smarter and smarter and smarter so fast you don't know what's going on. You can't argue that this is impossible, but if you create an AI architecture carefully enough, you can ensure that such a takeoff won't happen without you knowing it, so that you can halt it and slow it down in the middle if you so desire. My own view is that you gotta build these protections in, but even so, a takeoff on the order of 15 minutes, or even 3 days, is pretty unlikely. I think it's gonna be a more gradual process than that. Even though, let's say it takes 3 years to get from human baby level to superhuman level, that's still almost instantaneous on the scale of human history. You may still consider it a hard takeoff, but it's not so hard that you couldn't possibly intervene or monitor it or do anything about it. What's a soft takeoff scenario? A soft takeoff is basically the scenario portrayed by Ray Kurzweil in his book, The Singularity is Near. A soft takeoff involves intelligence gradually increasing year by year, perhaps through AIs embedded in everyday products like video games, help systems and word processors, and maybe weaponry that the army has developed. Dozens and dozens of products, hundreds of products with AI embedded in them, getting smarter and smarter year by year. And each year you have a smarter and smarter toaster until eventually your toaster can talk to you. And after 20, 30, 40 years of gradual development, we finally have AI that's truly sentient and is on the human level. If you have a soft takeoff like this, then everything is different than in the hard takeoff scenario. You have a long time to think about AI ethics and study each stage of intelligence while it's there. It also means that, effectively, in a soft takeoff scenario, AI is going to be owned by the most powerful players on Earth generically, governments, major corporations, and so forth. There's not so much of a first-mover advantage with a soft takeoff scenario, because whoever develops it first is just going to be taking the first 10% step, and other players will be able to come in and move things along further and further. In a hard takeoff scenario, the inventor of the first AI may have an amazingly epochal role in the development of intelligence, because they may create the first AI, and then that AI may self-improve and get smarter and smarter and smarter so fast that no one has time to copy the achievement of the first creators of AI. But in a soft takeoff scenario, it's not like that. So it's kind of important which scenario occurs in terms of the ethics and the pragmatics of the creation of AI. And on this topic, I'm sort of undecided. I think the reality is going to be somewhere in the middle of the extreme 5 minutes to singularity scenario and the 40 years of incrementally more intelligent toasters scenario. So we're going to be somewhere in the middle there. And my own view is that from a reasonably intelligent artificial baby to a superhuman AI, I would say that's going to take between 1 and 10 years. I'm not quite sure where in that spectrum it'll fall. I would be surprised if it took 10 years. I wouldn't be surprised if it took 3 or 5 years. Now I'm going to start to move toward the details of artificial intelligence. One big question that I've had in my mind since I first started thinking about AI when I was 12 or 13 years old is, why aren't we there yet? What's so hard about it? What are the bottlenecks between where we are right now and where we would like to be, which is having a thinking machine that's smarter than us, nice to us, it'll help us solve all the problems of life? Some people will say the bottleneck is computer hardware. If we just have faster computers, more memory, better memory cache access, bigger networks of computers, faster Ethernet, then AI will basically fall right out of the improvements in computer hardware technology. Or all we need is quantum computing. All we need is nanotech computing, and we'll have AI. Now, it's obvious that having better computer technology will make the achievement of AI a lot easier. But I don't think that is the secret. And I'm not at all sure that the computer technology we have right now is not good enough to make AI. My guess is the technology we have now is good enough to make AI. If hardware is not necessarily the bottleneck, then what is the bottleneck? And what I believe is the bottleneck is quite simply that until very recently, no one has known how to write the program. I mean, it's true that learning how to write the program would be easier if you had faster computers. We could run experiments more quickly and better programming languages that weren't such a pain for coding and debugging. But the bottom line is the reason we don't have AI is that no one has had a viable software design for a general, powerful, human level or beyond artificial intelligence. And then you have the question, why hasn't anyone come up with a design that will work? And one answer could be that it's just too hard. It's beyond the power of the human mind to understand how to make an AI without doing something like analyzing the brain in more detail than we've been able to so far. Now, I don't think this is the case. I think the reasons no one has until very recently come up with a viable design for an AI, and I say until very recently, because I think I have come up with a viable design for an AI, which I'll talk about in a couple minutes. But the reason why no one has come up with one until very recently is more to do with the sociology and psychology of the field of AI research. Now, artificial intelligence in the last few decades seems to me to have been wrapped up in a whole bunch of unproductive modes of thought. And it's an ironic thing, because I think a lot of the people in the field have been very smart and have been doing work that's good in a narrow technical sense. But the field as a whole has not been oriented in a way that really encouraged the achievement of great things and of general powerful intelligent systems. Looking at the field of AI and saying, look, there's been all this work and no one's produced a viable AI design, it's quite misleading. Because very little of that work in the field of AI has been focused in any way on how to make a thinking machine. This gets into a distinction between what is called narrow AI and what I like to call general AI, or artificial general intelligence. And some others have come to call human-level intelligence, but I think that's not as good of a term because it just sets the threshold too low. Humans are not that intelligent. Narrow AI refers to stuff like I just mentioned, programs that drive cars automatically, or play chess, or diagnose diseases, or juggle balls in the air, or solve algebraic equations. The point is a narrow AI program does one thing. It may do it really, really well. What it lacks is an understanding of the context in which it's acting. It lacks an understanding of its own self, an ability to flexibly modify and improve itself. It lacks the ability to automatically understand new problems that are given to it and formulate for itself a strategy to approach a new problem. But one of the big lessons that's been learned in the history of AI research since the 1960s is how little progress toward general AI is made by this work on narrow AI, which is a surprising and not obvious thing. You might think that by making programs that play chess or drive cars, you'd be moving toward a human being, an artificial human being or an artificial mind superior to a human being. You might think that because after all, human beings can play chess and drive cars. But really, the way that we found to make computers do these narrow tasks are funny little tricks which don't generalize to other domains, and they're nothing like the way human beings solve these problems. I'm going to segue into talking a bit about my own AI research and how I think it gets beyond the conceptual obstacles, the lack of understanding to stop people from articulating a viable AI design in the past. And I've been talking about my own approach to AI for a long time, and I've felt this change in attitude during the last few years pretty intently, because 5 years ago, if I went up to talk in front of a bunch of academic AI researchers about making a thinking machine, they just throw popcorn at me. I mean, no one could even accept it as something that a sane researcher could do. They just want to send you off to the nearest science fiction convention. And now, in the last few years, every major AI conference has at least a little session with 20, 30, or 50 people who actually want to talk about making thinking machines. All the ideas are not great ones, but at least they're not throwing popcorn at you.
I'm going to have to cut Dr. Ben Goertzel's talk a little bit short here because it's actually a 40-minute video that his firm Novamente has distributed, and I only have 29 minutes. But you can get the rest of this from Dr. Ben Goertzel at novamente.net. And so we'll come in here for the conclusion of his speech on artificial general intelligence and the singularity.
Even if Kurzweil's pessimistic projection is right, 2029 isn't that far off for human-level AI either. The main point I'd like to make in closing is that these extrapolations that I or Kurzweil or others make are not independent of the actions of human beings alive now, like the people in this room. So it's not like if we all just sit back and watch television all day, these curves are going to magically bring us to the singularity. The curves are relying on the extremely enthusiastic activities of myself and you guys and a whole bunch of other people in the world. And they're relying on people trying really hard to make AGI happen as quickly as possible. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us who understand the possibility and the reality of these things to figure out what we can do to help them to happen as rapidly as possible and as beneficially as possible. Otherwise, the curves are not going to come true. And in closing, a little more pessimistically, I want to mention some other curves that Hugo de Garis has plotted in his book, The Artelect War, which is a curve of number of people killed in each war. And that curve goes up really fast, just like Kurzweil's curves of Moore's Law and brain scanning. So this is basically the situation that I see it. We've got some outstanding exponential curves of technological advancement, some equally outstanding exponential curves of human destruction. And it's up to us which one wins.
That was most of the talk called Artificial General Intelligence and the Singularity by Dr. Ben Goertzel of Novamente.net. Novamente is an artificial intelligence design firm, and you can find out more about the work of Novamente by going to novamente.net, and Goertzel is spelled G-O-E-R-T-Z-E-L. I'm sure he would welcome any feedback on the ideas in his talk and certainly any assistance with his projects. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@ieet.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at ieet.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy high-tech and yet radically democratic future.